This is New Robot Overlords, a podcast that explores our evolving relationship with technology. I'm your host, Mick Willis, and I, for one, welcome our new robot overlords. My guest today is Paul Taylor with Ubiquity University. Paul, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mick, great to be here.
So, Paul, you're in online education now, or you're interested in it, but you have a really interesting background in consumer product marketing. So, tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. My background is I went into originally marketing with Colgate-Palmolive. I made the jump to the Coca-Cola company. I was doing marketing for Dasani and Powerade. And then my real passion was innovation. And so ended up taking over the global innovation role for Coke Classic and Diet Coke. And what I love about both marketing and innovation is just the simple unmet needs. I love identifying unmet needs at a global basis, at a community basis, and really trying to figure out how to get underneath those and understand them better.
So, Paul, what is Ubiquity University?
Ubiquity University is an online learning and innovation platform that seeks to empower change makers. And it's basically the answer to two fundamental questions. What do you want to learn? And what do you want to create?
I've heard you say in the past that there's a creativity gap in education. What does that mean?
The creativity gap in education, people forever, for the longest time, have been saying that our education system needs to be reformed, it's broken, it needs to be fixed. But there's no one consensus in terms of how to best do it. Our hypothesis is that the education system is not producing the creativity we want because it's based on an outdated guiding metaphor. It's based on a worldview that was perfect at its time in terms of really focusing on a scientific, reductionistic, industrial revolution worldview that was really good at producing logical, critical, sequential thinking. Ken Robinson has one of the most popular TED Talks ever called, you know, Education is Killing Creativity. And we've heard Daniel Pink wrote an amazing bestseller called A Whole New Mind that's talking about, again, this idea that we've been building our education system on the left side of our brain. And what we need to do is really focus on our whole mind and focus on the best of both the analytical mind, but also the conceptual mind.
As I understand it, there's a revolution of sorts happening in education with online universities popping up and resources like Khan Academy, Coursera, others. Are they modernizing the education system?
I think what we're seeing is the next evolution. So when we talk about the disruption of many of our systems through digital technology, you know, the good news is that it's really democratizing education on a global basis. Whenever we see technology come in and disrupt an industry, the outcome is that it becomes more accessible and more affordable. And I think that's something that's happening right now in a big, powerful way. I think the challenge is when you look at the medium as the breakthrough. So I think right now you've got a lot of very static, legacy-based education traditions, like you've got brands like Harvard that really look to protect the status quo. They're looking to protect their legacy systems. They're trying to figure out how do they translate their current winning business model into this new technology. Instead of looking at it and saying, what does this new technology truly enable? What does it allow us to generate and do differently? As opposed to trying to figure out how do we fit one box into this new format and basically do the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've seen that happen when new technology comes. Existing players think that they're taking advantage of it when they do silly things like when the web first started to come in vogue, companies would take their brochures and, you know, essentially scan them and put them on the web. And that was your website, was
right.
This brochure. And so I think what you're saying makes sense, that a lot of these universities are really just translating their existing wares into a new format online. Is that right?
I think that's what we're seeing as a first phase. You know, and they're being open-ended. They're putting big bets on it. We're seeing huge investment bets on these new platforms. They're not sure how to monetize, so they're looking at different revenue models in terms of just building their user base and trying to figure out the best way to build a revenue model. So I think the good news is we're seeing some open-mindedness in terms of the experimentation. But the experimentation seems to be more around the revenue model as opposed to focusing on transforming the curriculum. There was a really revolutionary IBM CEO study that came out in 2010 that basically validated what Fortune 1000 leaders have been saying for a long time, that higher education is unresponsive to how the world is changing. And it continues to produce the same type of skill set, inadequate to deal with what CEOs and global students are identifying as the number one challenge at this unique moment in time, which is the rapid acceleration of complexity. So in this whitewater world where you can only see a few inches in front of your eyes, we need analytical thinking, we need logical thinking, but we also need to transcend and include the best of conceptual, intuitive, holistic, creative thinking that really looks at the whole of the parts as opposed to just being really good at looking at the parts. Because we need to be able to simplify complexity in a hyper-complex world. And so that's a skill set our current education system isn't producing in terms of an outcome.
You're an online university. You're building an online platform. Mm-hmm. It's kind of apparent to me how you can take something like differential calculus and the technology can make it easier to learn. Mm-hmm. You know, you can drill those facts into someone. But I think to a lot of people, technology is kind of at odds with creativity and holistic thinking. It seems like the technology is cold and mechanical and only good at drilling facts into people, whereas I think what you're advocating is, the world needs, you know, more creative, holistic thinkers. How does the technology help you get there?
Yeah, no, great question. Number one, there was a study done in 1984 and that has become basically the empirical benchmark around measuring the effectiveness of human learning. And the challenge it identified is called the Two Sigma problem. And the Two Sigma problem identifies that our current method of learning is based on lecture-based learning. And lecture-based learning typically is where we test at the end of the learning period to measure or metric how well the students have mastered the content.
Right.
And in empirical studies, 50 out of 100 students are measured, have been measured to be able to master the content.
In a typical, say, university classroom, if you really only think you're getting a 50% effectiveness rate with lecture-based learning.
Right. And so then the next one sigma more effective is what's called as a mastery-based approach to learning. Mastery-based takes a lecture-based format, but breaks it up with intermittent sequencing of testing on the information in terms of asking and probing for understanding, probing for mastery of the content along the way. And that actually gets you to one sigma more effective, where 75 out of 100 of the students are then able to master the content at the end of the period. So what mastery-based learning opens up is critical thinking. It enables the possibility of critical thinking for problems, real-world problems that we don't have. So it's not about being able to game the system or being able to just be the best memorizer, but it's starting to prepare us to have the confidence to be able to go into developing the critical thinking and developing the problem-solving skills that we need to come up with the type of problems that we're facing that we've never faced before. So the first thought is that we really need to get from mastery-based learning, and this is where technology comes in, is that the most effective form of human learning is being able to bring in the benefit of personalized or individualized tutoring. And the real breakthrough here is that someone who has just mastered the content is in a unique position to then turn around and help someone understand where the barriers of learning, where most people get stuck, and be able to have that aha moment. So it's the role of the tutor. And this is where technology can create global learning communities, global learning platforms or networks, where people are recognizing that everyone's a teacher. Everyone's a student. Everyone's an expert at something. And everyone could use the benefit of a good tutor from now and then. And so what we're seeing is technology is really able to then create this ecosystem where people can play those multiple roles, where we're a student in one area, we're a teacher in another area, and we can actually enable the exchange of learning with teachers, students, and tutors within an ecosystem that wasn't possible without online technology.
So how is your company addressing that?
Right now, we are building out and designing the user interface and the user experience to really incentivize that type of exchange. We're looking at creating a marketplace where people can come in and build economic engines, I think.
So in your vision of what Ubiquity becomes this platform, is this to replace something like a high school learning experience? Or is this a replace a college experience? Mm-hmm. Or does this replace continuing education? Where does it fit in our existing understanding of how education works?
Yeah. Right now, we are primarily looking at the undergraduate experience. Our background is the graduate. So Ubiquity started out, we acquired the founders of Wisdom University, which was a graduate school for the last 7 years, licensed in the state of California, has really been focusing on building a unique pedagogy around full spectrum transformational learning or holistic learning. So it's been a boutique graduate school for the last 8 years, really mastering the principles of holistic or full spectrum transformational learning. We are now building out and expanding into the undergraduate program. We eventually picture being able to design the curriculum that we could make available to high schools as well, where it'd be an online curriculum, but that's probably a phase two for us.
You know, I've heard people say for a long time now how, you know, the education system's broke and a lot of different criticisms levied at it. You're coming at it from an angle that it doesn't give the type of holistic thinking that's necessary to give to solve the unique challenges of today. But then I also hear people complain that our kids can't read, they can't do math. You know, they complain about the ineffectiveness of in the U.S. anyways, the schooling system to produce people that knows what have traditionally been known as the basics. So how do you reconcile those two things? I mean, is the system broken for teaching the basics, or is it too good at teaching the basics at the expense of the creativity and the holistic thinking? It seems like you're attacking the problem that we're producing in general people who do have analytical skills and mm-hmm. who do have the sort of basics of reading, writing. You're kind of working on the assumption that we've got at least that bit covered in mm-hmm. our education system. Is that fair? Is that true?
So my background is innovation and marketing. I've really spent a lot of time digging into creativity and digging into innovation and understanding the gaps in our current education system. And so I'm looking at the unmet needs and really starting to synthesize and understand the gaps in education. We have education experts on our team that have spent a lifetime trying to figure out the exact question that you just answered. So our co-chair is Mark Ryan, who was a dean at Yale for 26 years. And our other co-chair is Stephanie Pace Marshall, who was the founding president of the Illinois Mathematics and Science Academy, known as IMSA. This ecosystem within Illinois where they're taking the best gifted mathematics and science students and really giving them that integrated holistic learning based on a question-led, inquiry-based approach to problem-solving, creativity, and collaboration. And out of that 20-year experiment that's creating leaders, founders that have come out and founded LinkedIn, they've come out and created PayPal. So what you're seeing is early days, but really interesting, provocative, expansive, creative thinkers coming out of those systems.
And what does this have to do with technology, really? I mean, we've skirted around it, but are we in a new day where the technology is actually enabling us to do something fundamentally different?
Yeah, I think the two things is one. So one is the community empowerment that we talked about before. Yeah. And it's creating truly global learning communities. We're going to be creating pods. So what you're seeing from the first experiments, Coursera is an interesting case study that Coursera launched out of Stanford University, where a couple professors broke out of Stanford and created Coursera. And in the first 4 months, Coursera has been able to attract 1.8 million learners into their program, where they have now 33 of the top universities in the world offering their courses for free, these massively open online courses. Only 38% of those students are from the U.S. So 62%, they have 195 countries represented. So just to bring in this global learning pod, where you actually can learn and tap into the diversity of thinkers all across the planet, number one. So community empowerment's huge. Number two, it's recognizing what Howard Gardner has been saying for a long time around honoring the uniqueness and complexity of every human being, and that we all have multiple intelligences. And he's identified 8 core multiple intelligences that we all have some varying degree of proficiency or aptitude in. And so I think what you can see, technology is finally here that can enable personalized curriculum. So you can imagine your children, you see their unique genius, their unique strengths, and their passion, where they're really interested and motivated to learn. So we can see where technology can then enable, you know, a lot of the language is flipping the classroom. The idea is flipping the classroom, where you can develop individualized, personalized, get away from standardized testing, and personalized curriculum that honors the multiple intelligences and the uniqueness of the individual.
A lot of people would argue that, in general, the use of technology in education, or let me just say it a simpler way, what I've said on the show before, that technology is making us dumber. Mm-hmm. We rely on it like a crutch for people can't add in their head anymore. You know, you're used to having something add for you or do arithmetic for you. Or just remember, you know, when was the battle of, you know, Gettysburg, whatever. Mm-hmm. Choose your battle. People don't remember it because it's only a Google search away. Does that aspect of technology inhibit the creation of smart, creative people in the future?
That's a really fun question. And here's my quick take on it. My take is that what I think technology is doing is enabling the fundamental purpose of a human life to truly come forth for the first time like it never has. And so I think there will be a basic set of needs that we need to learn. And you know, that's in experimentation right now in terms of what is that, you know, the reading, writing, arithmetic. What are those core basic human needs? But also recognizing that each and every one of us has a core passion of what we're here to explore, what we're here to experience, what we're here to express, and what we're here to expand. And I really believe that's the fundamental purpose of a human life, is to have the freedom to explore the profound reality of who we are, the uniqueness of who we are, to both experience it, explore it, express it, and expand it on behalf of the self, of the individual, and on behalf of the whole. There's 7 billion people here. I think each one of us is a living experiment of one whole trying to experience itself through the infinite many. I think technology is enabling that to happen for the first time in the most powerful way, so that this expression can come through.
You mentioned that there's a huge amount of investment going into online universities. I mean, we've seen this. You see, there's the new batch along the lines of Khan Academy and Coursera that you mentioned. There's the older batch, the online universities. I don't know a lot of their names. I know Kaplan. There's several other of those. So talk to me about, you know, what have they got right and what have they got wrong? Like, what are they doing with the online technology?
Mm-hmm. I think what's really encouraging in terms of what they've got right is that what you're seeing in the first generation of learning platforms is you're seeing what we always see in terms of the benefits of the disruptive technology. So online technology has come in and it's doing what it always does. It's creating more accessibility and it's creating more affordability.
Which is great.
It is great. So you know, what we're seeing is with Coursera, with the example of Coursera, we're seeing students in 195 different countries have access to the best artificial intelligence class by the best artificial intelligence instructor on the planet, and for free. So what's not to love about that? I think our biggest challenge in terms of that, we've all acknowledged that the education system has been broken for a long time and needs significant transformation, is what we're seeing is the same approach that didn't work in the classroom is now being translated into that online format. And that's where we want to see the technology truly being leveraged in terms of its benefits and cracking the codes in terms of how to optimize human learning.
So you make the argument that you're taking an existing curriculum, you're just moving it online. That gives you this bigger distribution, which is fantastic, but really doesn't solve the problem that I think you said 50% of kids don't master the material in
right.
that format. So do we know what should work or can work?
Yeah, the experiments are heading in two directions. And you're also seeing that the current learning platforms are leaning into that next learning experimentation, which is around breaking up, transcending from lecture-based learning to mastery learning. So we're seeing a lot of experimentation on the online learning platforms, really pushing into breaking up the lecture format and really flipping the classroom where the students are watching videos and then immediately checking in on the content. The next generation of experimentation beyond that is really figuring out how to enable individualized, personalized, both curriculum and integrating the role of the tutor. And so that's something where we're really committed to building that online learning community that focuses on, and the studies have shown that 98 out of 100 students will get to the point of mastering the content when they have the benefit of having the lectures broken up so they have a chance to immediately ask questions and try to grok the content, and being able to do that with their peers. So it's a student-centric approach to leveraging technology to understanding the uniqueness of the individual and then empowering that individual based on their multiple intelligences to be connected with a global community of people who think like they do, people who care about the same thing.
So if I had to bring this into sort of present-day internet terms, you take the personalization that, you know, something akin to what Amazon does for products, mm-hmm. you have that for the material. You have the network effects of something like Facebook that brings people together from wherever they might be.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think the richness of the web can take us to... So all of our conversation is focused on one question so far in terms of what do you want to learn? So the first wave of disruption within education and online technology experimentation is all around that question, what do you want to learn? Which we think is great. It's incredible. And that's the next level. But in isolation, it's also taking the current classroom and just putting it online, but not leveraging that. We don't work that way. When we learn something, what we're really inspired to do is, what do you want to create? What do you want to do with that learning? And so what we're most interested in is the mashup of learning and creativity, the mashup of education and innovation. And so when we look at the creativity gap, where only 1 in 4 people on the planet that were done in the Adobe creativity study feel like they're achieving their creative potential. And it's not that they don't think creativity is important. They really do. 80% of the people on the planet that were surveyed in this study said that creativity is the number one driver of the economy. And 66% of people said that creativity is the most important contribution we could be making to society. So creativity is really important. Only 1 in 4 think that we're achieving our creative potential. And when you look at CEOs of the Fortune 1000 companies and you look at our students, the best and the brightest students coming out of our high school system, they're looking at our current education system and saying, the number one trait I require is creativity as a leadership skill, leadership trait. And I don't see that I'm going to get that. So just taking the same curriculum, putting online and repackaging it is not going to get them to the next level. So going back to just closing the loop on creativity, what do you want to learn? And what do you want to create? So our platform, the Ubiquity platform, is focused on the two questions. What do you want to learn? What do you want to create? And solving those, enabling those unmet needs for what do you want to learn in terms of mastery, growth, and transformation.
So I think what you're really working on are these, you're taking as a given that people have covered their sort of survival base. Mm-hmm. And that whether it's through relative wealth, or, you know, just the state of the world today, we're now sort of freed up to look at a higher level of problem. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that is fair.
It strikes me that, you know, technology's role in it I mean, in many ways, the reason that we don't worry as much about the base survival things is because of technology. I mean, if you look at, you know, our ability to fight disease a lot better than we have historically is based on, you know, biotechnology, I would argue. And we can, you know, the influenza doesn't kill off, you know, huge swaths of the world's population every year. It lets us grow more food on less land. For much of human existence, these have been things that we've had to spend all of our waking hours worrying about. If we don't have to spend all of our time worrying about, you know, not being eaten by a tiger, you know, having enough food, those types of things, I would argue it's almost technology is taking the place of our efforts. Don't worry about that anymore. Now go worry about something else. So it's almost like at the same time that you say technology is, should enable us to be more creative and think holistically and so forth, it's also pushing us in that direction. Because, I mean, you really don't want to waste your time, one could argue, studying multiplication tables.
Mm-hmm.
If you could spend those same brain cycles working on something more creative or constructive at a higher level.
Yep. More animating, something that truly makes you come alive.
So it makes you seem like you're a pretty lucky time in human history, doesn't it?
We're living it. It's and it's complex. It's messy. There's never been so much uncertainty. You know, so with the rapid acceleration of complexity, we get the rapid acceleration of uncertainty. And that freaks a lot of us out because it you know, what you have is that change. And so I think we're a young species. You know, I think you look at 250,000 years of history, depending on who you ask. And I think, because I love the question, I love the thesis that you put for new robot overlords in terms of the impact of technology, in terms of how we show up as human beings. And I think what it enables is that our primary motivation system for our first 250,000 years of existence was survival. And that was a good thing until it wasn't. And it doesn't need to be our primary motivation system any longer. Because our basic needs are being met more and more, and technology is really enabling that to happen. In the spirit of transcend and include, it's not that we reject the need to survive, but we're enabled to go to the next S-curve of experimentation as a species, as a society, in terms of what if our primary motivation was to self-actualize? And what we're seeing from Maslow's hierarchy of needs is that self-actualizing imperative is really when we get to the top of knowing thyself, is that our deepest desire is to help others to self-actualize. And so what we're seeing now is the higher order of Maslow's pyramid is being enabled and liberated. And that's a lot more exciting in terms of what is the fundamental purpose of a human life. And Joseph Campbell, the great myth maker, would always, when he was asked that question, he said, everyone thinks the answer is meaning. He goes, meaning's part of it. What we really want is to feel radically alive. And radically alive is when we're animated and working on things where there's no time. And that's where creativity and imagination and our true passion, what we're hardwired, the type of questions we want to explore and experience and express and expand. When we're on task, when we're on purpose, we're on fire. And that's what each one of us is looking for. We want that feeling of being radically alive. And technology is really empowering it, the first place to start, as a great enabling platform so that we can shift to this next primary motivation, which is to self-actualize and help others, is through education.
Yeah, so it has the potential to help lift us up. At the same time, you know, if you look around, I can make a strong case that for many people, the technology is not giving them that extra leverage they need to go self-actualize wherever you put it, but it's giving them something to stare at for 3 hours a day and do nothing. You know what I mean?
Totally.
So is it really everyone that wants to be a creator and an innovator who's really interested right now on leaping to these higher levels of Maslow's hierarchy? Or are there different types of people? Are we splitting off as a species? Those that are going to be the, you know, just plugged into the grid, watching eye devices everywhere they go, and those that are actually above the fray?
I love that question. And I don't pretend to have the answer, but I'll share mine. I'd like to hear your thought on it too. Because what I think is what is possible now. So technology is a medium. And, you know, when I think of, you know, those terms, Web 2.0 and Web 3.0 and all the different definitions floating around that, what I really think is technology is at a point where we're fascinated by it as this great enabler, but we're now at a point where it's going to fall into the invisible, where we're more fascinated by the benefit that it enables. So we take our fascination off of the technology and on to the liberation. Because I think, I don't know if everyone wants to be a creator or an innovator, but I, you know what I do know? I know everybody wants the freedom to be taken off the clock. Human beings want to be taken off the clock. We don't want a job. We don't want a career. We actually want the freedom to be able to explore what we want.
You know, this is an election season, and I've we don't want jobs. Well, as long as we get paid. right.
But at the core, if you ask anyone, I grew up in a family, I love my dad like crazy. He had a job his entire life. He's 65. He's just about to retire. He put in 46 years at this company.
Wow.
And I had a career. I was at Coke. My career was flourishing. I walked away from it. I walked away from a golden path to the point my friends, like, you know, had to have an intervention. What are you doing? But it was this, you know, calling that something else is out there. So I'm with you. I live in a practical world. I get the fact right now that it's all about the economy, stupid, and we need more jobs. But at the end of the day, that's not what we truly want. Peter Diamandis in Abundance talks about right now in the developed world, 80% of our income is focused on meeting our survival-based needs. And I think we're at a point when this is what his argument, and we touched on this earlier, his argument is that we're really on the threshold of technology taking off, that we can make that number significantly smaller. And if then you take the burden off of our need to generate income to fund that 80% of those basic needs, then we have the freedom to start pursuing those higher order human needs. It's a whole new way of thinking. It's a whole new experiment. It can only happen one step at a time.
Yeah, I think historically, I'm not a great student of history, but as I understand it, these great sort of revolutions in thinking that have happened throughout time, whether the Romans or, you know, Florence, Italy, and the arts, you know, they, what you needed to have happen before you could sort of reach another level was that there were people who were free to think about that next higher level thing, that weren't just worried about getting their dinner. Mm-hmm. And they could think, you know, a Socrates or a Michelangelo or something. So I guess one can say that's a prerequisite. And in fact, I think there's also a lot of evidence that the interconnectedness of the world, like a lot of these innovations happened at places where there was a lot of trade or a lot of intermingling of ideas. Mm-hmm. So if you project to today's world, if you do take care of basic survival needs, yes, you might get a bunch of fat people, mm-hmm. right? Which happens. But on the other hand, when you mix it up with the interconnectedness of the web and how it is, you can exchange ideas and everything. And you can have people who can, say, burn an hour recording a podcast about a, you know, very esoteric topic. You can get some magic to happen that you're not really planning mm-hmm. ahead of time. And then only in retrospect, you'll see that it was possible because of those things coming together.
I think that's exactly right. And I think WALL-E did a great job of one scenario in the future where you have a bunch of really, really fat humans on a ship floating around, basically yeah. getting their food intravenous. But just, you know, just to pull it all back in.
Lunch in a cup.
To pull it all back in, what's most important is meeting people where we are at right now, at this moment in time. And the next enabler is very simple in terms of our passion, in terms of what do we want to learn. And so we're creating that platform to enable people to learn. A lot of people are placing that bet in terms of what will the next ubiquitous winning platform be around human learning or online learning. But we're the only one I know that's really experimenting around the mashup of creativity with learning and really enabling that. And I think it's a practical experiment around helping people, to empower people, to be able to put their shingle up, put their kiosk up online, and giving them the tools. A great example of who's doing that is Udemy. Udemy is a learning platform around what do you want to learn. They're starting to create a marketplace where people can show up and start to exchange what they're interested in. And so you can both discover courses and you can create courses. But again, Ubiquity right now is focusing on the greater market need in terms of it's an open-ended platform. We really want to focus on change makers. We're focusing on the crazy ones. We're focusing on the people that are most passionate about creating a different world, that want to put a dent in the universe. And we want to meet their needs. And we want to fill that counterculture void. I don't know if you've seen Apple ads lately, but Apple ads have become so lifestyle. They're so mainstream. It's such a disappointment. There's just that whole counterculture edge that we're really doing something unique. They've fallen into the trap of becoming a big mainstream mass brand that's trying to appeal to everyone. And it's lost its edge. And we want to go in and pick up that edge of really appealing and enabling the change makers to bring their critical innovation into the world.
My guest today has been Paul Taylor. Paul, thanks for being on New Robot Overlord.
Thanks, Mick. It was great to be here.